Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we are continuing our discussion about the Trump administration's escalating war on the media, and there is a lot to discuss. On July 2nd, Paramount agreed to pay Trump $16 million to settle his lawsuit over the editing of a 60 Minutes interview with presidential candidate Kamala Harris. Paramount is the parent company of CBS and its news programming, including 60 Minutes. According to the New York Times, Paramount said its payment included Trump's legal fees. The rest will go to Trump's future presidential library. Many lawyers say the lawsuit was baseless. As the New York Times reports, Sherry Redstone, the chair and controlling shareholder of Paramount, told her board that she favored exploring a settlement with Trump. Some executives at the company viewed Trump's lawsuit as a potential hurdle to completing an $8 billion merger with the Hollywood studio Skydance. Paramount shareholders were also concerned that if they didn't hand over the money, the deal would not go through, according to the New York Times. Here is Stephen Colbert discussing the deal on The Late Show on July 14th, which airs on CBS.
While I was on vacation, my parent corporation, Paramount, paid Donald Trump a $16 million settlement over his 60 Minutes lawsuit. As someone who has always been a proud employee of this network, I am offended. And I don't know if anything will ever repair my trust in this company. But just taking a stab at it, I'd say $16 million would help. This settlement. This settlement is for a nuisance lawsuit Trump filed claiming that 60 Minutes deceptively edited their interview with then-candidate Kamala Harris last fall. Paramount knows they could have easily fought it because, in their own words, the lawsuit was completely without merit. And keep in mind, Paramount produced Transformers, Rise of the Beast. They know completely without merit. Ah. Now, unlike the payoffs from ABC and Twitter, Paramount's settlement did not include an apology. Instead, that's good. Instead, the corporation released a statement where they said, "You may take our money, but you will never take our dignity. You may, however, purchase our dignity for the low, low price of $16 million. We need the cash." Now, I believe... What can I say? Mr. Stephen loves to dance. Now, I believe that this kind of complicated financial settlement with a sitting government official has a technical name in legal circles. It's big fat bribe. Because this all comes as Paramount's owners are trying to get the Trump administration to approve the sale of our network to a new owner, Skydance. Not the music I was expecting. Okay. That was me dancing in the sky. And some of the TV typers out there are blogging that once Skydance gets CBS, the new owner's desire to please Trump could put pressure on late-night host and frequent Trump critic Stephen Colbert.
That was Stephen Colbert on July 14th discussing the Paramount-Skydance merger and Paramount paying Trump $16 million. On July 17th, Paramount told Colbert that his show will be canceled next May. Here is Fox anchor Bill Hemmer asking FCC Chair Brendan Carr about the cancellation of The Late Show.
Did President Trump have anything to do with the cancellation of Stephen Colbert's show?
Well, here's what's important to keep in mind is a broader dynamic. When President Trump ran for election, he ran right at these legacy broadcast media outfits. There's a lot of consequences that are flowing from President Trump deciding, I'm not going to play by the rules.
I asked you a very direct question. I did not hear a yes or a no in your answer.
That was FCC Chair Brendan Carr being asked about the cancellation of The Late Show on Fox. On July 24th, Trump's FCC voted 2-1 along party lines to approve the $8 billion merger. The Redstone family's payout for the sale of National Amusements, which holds the family's controlling stake in Paramount, will be about $1.75 billion, according to Reuters. Senator Elizabeth Warren is calling for an investigation. 41-year-old David Ellison founded Skydance. Larry Ellison, the founder of Oracle, is putting up most of the $8 billion bid by his son to buy Paramount. This is not the first settlement by a major media conglomerate. In mid-December, Disney, which owns ABC News, agreed to settle a defamation suit against this week's George Stephanopoulos for saying Trump had been found liable for raping writer E. Jean Carroll. Last year, Trump was found liable for sexually abusing and defaming E. Jean Carroll and was ordered to pay her $88 million. ABC News agreed to pay $15 million toward Trump's presidential library and another $1 million in legal fees to the law firm of Trump's attorney. And then in June, ABC News dropped veteran correspondent and anchor Terry Moran after he posted on social media that Trump and Stephen Miller were world-class haters. And then there's more. In February, after the Associated Press refused to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, Trump banned the AP from sending its reporters to the Oval Office and other presidential events. Last Tuesday, the U.S. Court of Appeals denied an appeal by the AP for a hearing on its efforts to restore full access to cover presidential events. The appeals court will consider the full merits of the AP's case in the fall. Just recently, the White House prohibited a Wall Street Journal reporter from boarding Air Force One to cover Trump's trip to Scotland after the paper published an article on July 17th called Jeffrey Epstein's Friends Sent Him Body Letters for a 50th Birthday. One was from Donald Trump. In a statement, Trump's press secretary, Karoline Leavitt, said due to the Wall Street Journal's fake and defamatory conduct, they will not be one of the 13 outlets on board. Trump has filed a $10 billion defamation lawsuit against the two reporters who wrote the piece and News Corp chair emeritus and longtime Trump ally Rupert Murdoch and Dow Jones CEO Robert Thompson. News Corp and Dow Jones owns the Wall Street Journal. So there's a lot going on here. What precedent does all of this set? What does this mean for an independent and free press? Tim Richardson with PEN America told HuffPost, Trump's attacks set a very dangerous precedent, and it is hard to say where this ends. Well, what are your thoughts on all of this? What do you think this means for the media? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by two guests. Jeff Cohen is a longtime media critic who founded the media watch group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting in 1986 and co-founded the activist group Roots Action in 2011. Jeff Cohen has co-produced documentaries, including All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, and the Spirit of I.F. Stone. He is the author of Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. Jeff Cohen was senior producer of MSNBC's Phil Donahue show until it was terminated 3 weeks before the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. You might remember that Phil Donahue was fired for airing anti-war voices when most of the corporate media were cheering on the Bush administration. Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Rose.
Great to have you. Angelo Carosone is chair and president of Media Matters, a nonprofit progressive research and information center dedicated to monitoring, analyzing, and correcting conservative misinformation in the U.S. media. According to a recent report in the New York Times, Media Matters is struggling to withstand months of legal assaults by Trump's allies, offering a glimpse of what might be in store for even well-funded targets of his retribution campaigns. Media Matters has racked up about $15 million in legal fees over the past 20 months to defend itself against lawsuits by Elon Musk, in addition to investigations by Trump's Federal Trade Commission and Republican state attorneys general. Hi, Angelo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we dive in and talk about all of this, Angelo, do you want to respond to this New York Times piece about what is happening with Media Matters also dealing with legal assaults by Trump's allies?
I mean, the thing that I would say, I mean, and I think as you described it is accurate, is that everyone else is folding and we're fighting. And, you know, a lot of what we're going to talk about, right, is, you know, obviously with Paramount and some of these other big media properties, is that they chose not to fight. And I think we're seeing that time and time again. And we're fighting. And I think what the Times did was lay out the harms and the consequences of continuing to do that fight and the costs. I think it's worth it. I think it's the only thing really worth fighting for if you're a media outlet. If you're not going to fight for your right to report and to do it free of retribution from the government, then what are you doing? So that's really what I have to say. And I think from the last thing I'll just note is that we're if we can do it, there's really no reason that they can't. I mean, you know, we are defending ourselves and our rights as aggressively as we can. And if we can do it, like I said, I think there's no reason why Paramount and others shouldn't. And in fact, I think it's worse that they don't, because it's not just that they capitulate. They then smooth and pave the way for others to follow suit and for, you know, sort of these tactics to gain more, you know, more heft and become more common and more frequent. So it's even worse when they don't defend themselves, because they then compound the effectiveness and the potency of the approach that we're seeing out of this administration.
Well, and to your point, when it comes to Paramount, lawyers said that that lawsuit was baseless. Right. Jeff, what are your thoughts about this? I mean, the intro is really long because there's so many details here, and I had to read so many stories just to put all of these pieces together. But overall, we're talking about CBS and ABC capitulating to Trump. What do you think about that, and what precedent does it set?
Yeah, I think it's more accurate to say Disney and Paramount capitulated.
Right.
These media conglomerates have taken more and more power. In my view, it began in the 80s with Reagan, and then this horrible Telecommunications Act that President Bill Clinton worked with right-wing Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich to pass. I mean, we've got the media have been placed in the hands of an ever-shrinking number of ever-growing conglomerates. So Disney capitulated. ABC News is a small part of what it does. And Disney certainly doesn't want ABC News to in any way interfere with its profit. You could say the same thing. You gave all the details about Paramount. You know, they have... they don't want CBS News or Colbert or The Daily Show to interfere with their profits. These media conglomerates do not care about the free flow of information or the First Amendment, you know, or solid, tough journalism. What they care about is profit maximization. And, you know, at 60 Minutes, where they did absolutely nothing wrong. Everyone knows it. You know, they edited a long interview down. That's what television news does. Anyone who's worked in television news, radio news, print news knows you often take a long interview and edit it. They edited it fairly, but Paramount wanted this merger to go through. They needed to make concessions. And they bottled up 60 Minutes for months. For months, they've been harassing 60 Minutes. It began right after 60 Minutes did a fairly decent report on Gaza and the State Department employees who had quit over the Biden administration's complicity with what was happening in Gaza. That was back in January. And they were continuously Paramount meddling as part of getting this merger approved by Trump's Federal Communications Commission. And it led to the head of 60 Minutes, the executive producer, Bill Owens, and his boss, the head of CBS News, Wendy McMahon, they resigned because they couldn't handle the interference from Paramount. So we're in a precarious situation because media conglomerates don't care about journalism or the First Amendment. They just care about their bottom line. And if that means that they're complicit with this administration in Washington that cares nothing about journalism or First Amendment, they will be complicit.
To your point, Jeff, the Washington Post reports that Sherry Redstone, Paramount's chair and controlling shareholder, was increasingly weighing in on the news output of 60 Minutes. In January, she objected to CBS executives about a segment, like you just said, about Israel's war in Gaza, a point of particular interest for her. And days later, actually a day later, according to the Washington Post, the company appointed Susan Zirinsky, the former president of CBS News, who is close to Sherry Redstone, to a new role overseeing standards at the news division. In that role, Zirinsky reviewed 60 Minutes segments that she deemed sensitive before they aired. Those segments were often politically oriented and inevitably involved the president, who dominates the news cycle. And then in April, as you said, Bill Owens, executive producer of CBS, said he can no longer make independent journalism decisions for the program. And so he left.
And it's getting worse. I mean, we understand the federal filings that Paramount, Skydance, to get the merger to happen, to get the FCC approval, and the federal communications chair is a guy who's as ideological as Sean Hannity. His name is Brendan Carr. That's the federal communications chair that they were appealing to. And in their filings, we know that Skydance, the new Skydance Paramount company, will be, they'll have a permanent internal watchdog enforcing ideological, restraints. And there's rumors, I mean, Trump said it on social media, and the New York Post claims that they know the details, that besides the $16 million that Paramount handed over to Trump's non-existent, future library, they also promised that they would provide $15 to $20 million in public service announcements for Trump causes when there's the new Skydance Paramount company. So it's a, it's nightmarish. We always knew what Trump was capable of when he came back in January. I think what people are learning, including a lot of liberals and middle of the roaders, is they're learning that the problem isn't so much Trump. It's that corporate universities, corporate media outlets, and media conglomerates, corporate law firms, they will do anything to maximize profit, even if it means selling out principles of rule of law, First Amendment, freedom of speech, et cetera, et cetera. Mm.
Angela, what would you like to add more about the precedent that this all sets and what Jeff laid out there about the bigger picture of these corporations owning so much? I mean, if you look at Disney, you've got all of the Walt Disney Pictures, Marvel, 20th Century Studios, FX Network, ABC, ESPN, Hulu, theme parks. And then there's the news, which we know that news doesn't make that much money. And at the end of the day, it's about the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a few thoughts on that. One is that the large corporate entanglements of it obviously create a lot of pressure points for the government when it's, misused to exploit. And that's what we're seeing play out here. They're so big that their own interests, they're not going to put news first or journalism first. And that extends beyond the media properties we talked about. We saw that, even see that play out. And Brendan Carr has been very vocal about this and others. We have when it comes to the tech space and social media platforms, their business are going to intersect, and they're going to make adjustments there the same way that newsrooms would think about the front page of a paper or how headlines are or how they frame stories. The platforms are going to take similar actions, and we've already seen them rolling back policies to avoid, either pressure from the government or to anticipate future endeavors that they don't want the government to interfere with, that because especially this administration has made it very clear that they're willing to leverage the power of government to interfere with those deals. So it's become an actual, you know, they've intensified the cost calculus of it. So that's a big factor here. And I think you can compare that, weirdly enough, even if these media properties are so big, it's not just their size that's the issue. Obviously, that's the principal issue. It's also how many of them have pending business before the government. It's possible that the scenarios would be a little bit different if they didn't have mergers that they needed to be approved right now, not to herald them. But I think that's kind of what you're seeing play out a little bit with Murdoch and Fox and, you know, and News Corp and Trump, right? There's not a Fox merger on the horizon in 3 months that they need approval from. And as many people are, I'm not sure they're necessarily praising him, but acknowledging the Wall Street Journal's willingness to sort of publish content and report even in the face of these retaliatory threats and litigation, I bet that it might be a very different situation if in 3 months they needed to have something approved by this administration. And that is a reflection of just how, when you get so big, that there's just so many leverage and pressure points that the government can exploit. But I think there's another effect of this as well, because we talk about these big players, and I look at it through a different lens, which is that when they take this tactic, this approach, and I think it's worth considering that we're not just talking about government action here too, it's this 1-2 punch where they deploy civil litigation and then deploy the tools of government to sort of buttress and reinforce that same objective. It really starts to poison the well. When these entities don't fight, who have the resources and the capacities to actually fight, as you pointed out at the beginning, these baseless lawsuits, they have the capacity to do it. What about the independent or the smaller news outlet that has, or you know, a staff of 100 or so that is just able to break even? If a big entity like Paramount, you know, is affected by the cost calculus, and in this case, we're not talking about a choice between being profitable or not profitable, it's just having a little less resources. How does a small outlet do that when the tactic becomes so normalized? And what ends up happening, and this is the part that is hard to really quantify and capture, but is probably the more devastating piece, we would all survive, you know, CBS, if it you know, changing its coverage a little bit, or 60 Minutes being, you know, having its news coverage affected. It would be bad, but we could all survive that if it was contained. But when they fold as quickly as they have, and the calculus becomes more normalized, a lot of other publications and news outlets, in anticipation or to avoid these types of retaliations that they know they couldn't absorb at all, they then proactively adjust their coverage to avoid holding truth to power or reporting the types of things that would get them either to be the subject of a baseless lawsuit or some type of retaliatory action from the government, simply because they know that it's an existential choice for them. And that's the really profound and devastating consequence of these big players folding, aside from the grossness of it and, you know, the effect of all this consolidation that's let them get so leveraged that they have, you know, that they can, that they're so vulnerable to this pressure. It's what it does to the overall ecosystem by sort of sending the message very loud and clear that you can't fight, so you might as well, you know, avoid anything that's going to get you in trouble in the first place. Go along to get along. And it's a very hard thing to capture and understand how it's happening, but certainly it is. And that's how you really go from these one-offs to these contained harms to something that has profound consequences for all of us and is really a larger part of the authoritarian playbook.
Jeff, before we go to break, what would you add? The message that is being sent is very clear. Angelo makes a good point about the message this also sends to independent media, and they just don't have the resources to fight back in many cases. I mean, look what's happening to public media right now. We'll talk more about that after a break. We've been doing so many shows about the cuts to public radio and public TV.
Well, yeah, I think Angelo laid out the problem. If these big media conglomerates have so many resources, are complicit, what's going to happen to the smaller, medium-sized for-profit outlets? I think we should have some good news here. The good news is that independent news outlets don't worry about a merger needing to be approved by the Federal Communications Commission. They do worry about harassment lawsuits, but independent journalists and independent news outlets can always get pro bono legal work, or often can get that. So the good news is, and I know the assault on public broadcasting is atrocious, but you know there are independent outlets out there that are going to keep speaking truth to power. They're not going to be intimidated, and you're going to see a real difference between what you get from Disney-owned ABC News and Skydance Paramount-owned CBS News and independent websites or independent programs or Democracy Now. You know, the difference between the two is going to widen, as Angelo is right. This will have a chilling effect throughout the media, but there are these independents that don't give a darn and will be emboldened that the need for independent journalism is more important now than ever.
Mm. We're going to take a quick break. Jeff Cohen is a longtime media critic who founded the media watch group FAIR back in 1986 and co-founded the activist group Roots Action in 2011. Jeff is the author of Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. He was senior producer of MSNBC's Phil Donahue primetime show until it was canceled 3 weeks before the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. Angelo Carusone is chair and president of Media Matters, a nonprofit research and information center that monitors, analyzes, and corrects conservative misinformation in the U.S. media. You can join us at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts on Trump's escalating war on the media and the precedent this is setting? You can also email your call at kalw.org. And before we go to break, we wanted to play a clip from veteran journalist and 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pelley speaking at Wake Forest University's commencement address a month ago.
Our sacred rule of law is under attack. Journalism is under attack. Universities are under attack. Freedom of speech is under attack. And insidious fear is reaching through our schools, our businesses, our homes, and into our private thoughts. The fear to speak in America. Power can rewrite history with grotesque, false narratives. They can make criminals heroes and heroes criminals. Power can change the definition of the words we use to describe reality. Diversity is now described as illegal. Equity is to be shunned. Inclusion is a dirty word. This is an old playbook, my friends. There's nothing new in this.
That was veteran journalist and 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pelley speaking at Wake Forest University's commencement address 1 month ago. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the Trump administration's escalating war on the media. And we're joined today by longtime media critic Jeff Cohen. He's done a lot of work at all levels of the media. He was senior producer of MSNBC's Phil Donahue show until it was canceled 3 weeks before the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. He founded FAIR back in 1986. He's co-produced documentaries about the media, and he's author of Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. Angelo Carusone is chair and president of Media Matters. They monitor, analyze, and correct conservative misinformation in the media. One of their new stories is about Fox mentioning Obama over three times more than Epstein since Tulsi Gabbard released a report accusing Obama of treason over the Russia election interference investigation. So we're going to talk about Epstein. We're going to talk about Trump's lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal over their report about Trump and Epstein. But first, we're going to play another clip from The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. I've been watching Stephen Colbert, and it sounds like he's going to make the best of the time that he has left. He is not holding back. And a lot of people are wondering if they're going to let him go before next year. Here he is on Friday night talking about Trump's ties to Jeffrey Epstein.
The incriminating details just keep coming out. For instance, this resurfaced 2010 Jeffrey Epstein deposition.
Have you ever socialized with Donald Trump in the presence of females under the age of 18?
Okay, that's a slam dunk. Just say no. Okay, take it away, Jeffrey.
Though I'd like to answer that question, at least today, I'm going to have to assert my 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendment rights, sir.
Wow. Not a great sign when the pedophile is being asked if you're doing a pervert ride-along, and their response is, I'd like to invoke the entire Constitution, the Magna Carta, the Napoleonic Code, and just to cover my bases, let's throw in the entire Cheesecake Factory menu. Just whatever. The latest development in this story is that soon we may be able to see Trump's name in those files for ourselves, because last night, in defiance of the president with a Republican majority, the House Oversight Committee voted to subpoena all documents related to the Jeffrey Epstein case in a vote of 8-2. The president made a big deal about how he broke off the relationship with Jeffrey Epstein a long time ago. But according to Epstein's brother, Mark Epstein, Jeffrey said he stopped hanging out with Trump when he realized Trump was a crook. Wow! That's extraordinary. Jeffrey Epstein breaking it off with you because you're a crook. Epstein's brother had a couple of details about just what a dirtbag Trump was, including this one.
I was talking to Jeffrey, and he told me that he was talking to Donald, and he asked Donald, how come you sleep with so many married women? And Donald's answer was, because it's so wrong.
Exactly. No, those are exactly the ethics you want in a president.
So obviously, Stephen Colbert is just going for it. And it'll be interesting to see if Paramount lets him go before they cancel his show next year. So let's talk about what's happening with Trump and the Wall Street Journal, because this one's really interesting for obvious reasons with Rupert Murdoch involved. So the White House prohibited a Wall Street Journal reporter from boarding Air Force One to cover Trump's trip to Scotland after the paper published an article on July 17th called Jeffrey Epstein's Friends Sent Him Body Letters for a 50th Birthday. One was from Donald Trump. Trump's press secretary said that this was fake and defamatory, and the Wall Street Journal will not be one of the 13 outlets on board. So Trump files a $10 billion defamation lawsuit against the reporters and Rupert Murdoch, who's a longtime ally. Jeff, what are your thoughts on this? The latest is that, let's see, the New York Times is reporting that the Trump team wants Murdoch to be deposed within 15 days. This just came out yesterday, and they say this is because he's 94 years old. And they want him deposed ASAP. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, I would love to see that deposition. You're right that Rupert Murdoch, off and on, mostly on, has been a strong ally of Trump. He wasn't warm to him when he first ran for president, but he warmed up very quickly. And the Murdoch empire, especially Fox News, has been crucial to Trump. My concern is that it's no longer just Paramount that is the boss of CBS News and Colbert and Comedy Central. The Daily Show is another Paramount property. It's now Skydance Paramount. And the Skydance leadership, it's sort of like Rupert Murdoch in some ways. I mean, you know, you've got David Ellison as the young CEO of Skydance, but the money came from his dad, Larry Ellison of Oracle. And I saw a report, maybe the headline was a little bit overstated. Larry Ellison just quietly became the most powerful man in America. This is from Slate a few days ago. Skydance is even more cozy with Trump than Sherry Redstone was trying to be. So that's what concerns me. And I'm not convinced. I mean, I'm glad that for now, the Wall Street Journal and the Murdoch Empire is resisting this suit, but it would not surprise me if they capitulate as well. And Rose, you raised an interesting point. Stephen Colbert has not letting up at all. Every night it was about Trump and it was about Epstein. And if you watch the comedy shows, whether it's Colbert or The Daily Show, which are owned by Paramount, or Jimmy Kimmel, which is owned by Disney, or Seth Meyers on NBC, owned by the Comcast conglomerate, you often get more in-depth news from the comedians than you get from the journalists who work at those big television networks. So it would not surprise me if Colbert did not make it to May of next year. It would not surprise me if The Daily Show is taken off of the air by then as well.
Well, we're going to talk more about the Ellisons, but since you brought this up, let's hear Jon Stewart's reaction to CBS's decision to cancel, well, at CBS Paramount, to cancel The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Do we have clip two?
I understand the corporate fear. I understand the fear that you and your advertisers have with $8 billion at stake. But understand this, truly. The shows that you now seek to cancel, censor, and control, a not insignificant portion of that $8 billion value came from those shows. That's what made you that money. Something, shows that take a stand, shows that are unafraid, and not to, believe me, this is not a we speak truth to power. We don't. We speak opinions to television cameras, but we try every night. And if you believe, as corporations or as networks, you can make yourselves so innocuous that you can serve a gruel so flavorless that you will never again be on the Boy King's radar, A, why will anyone watch you? And you are wrong. You want to know how impossible. Is it true? Do you want to know how impossible it is to stay on Lord Farquaad's good side?
President Trump says he will sue the Wall Street Journal and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, who also owns Fox News.
Donald Trump is suing Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox News, the man, other than Biden, maybe most responsible for getting Trump elected. Fox! I snuck that in there! Yeah! Spends 24 hours a day blowing Trump, and it's not enough.
That is Jon Stewart reacting to CBS's decision. So Comedy Central is also owned by Paramount, and people are wondering if Jon Stewart is going to have a job soon. We have an email from Stephen who says, find out who the heads of these corporations are instead of speaking of them as a faceless institution. People are making these decisions. Responsibility for the failure of ethical trust is done by individuals. So thank you for that, Stephen. This is really important. I actually had to look this up. I had no idea. So Paramount is owned by Brian Robbins, a film producer, director, and executive. And then Disney is owned by Bob Iger. So those are the two that own those conglomerates. And then when Jeff was talking about Larry Ellison, so Larry Ellison has a lot of money, according to reports, about $175 billion. And this was, I thought this was really interesting, Angelo, because you have to wonder what these guys are going to do with even more power. According to reports, Larry Ellison is a major supporter of AI, and He wants cameras to be everywhere. Last fall, he told Oracle investors, citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. It's unimpeachable. I just thought that was interesting, just reading a lot of pieces about who these people are, because you just have to wonder, you know, $175 billion, why does this guy want Skydance? Well, his son, young son, is going to run it. And what does he plan to do? What kind of agenda are they planning for this?
I mean, boy, there's a lot to say there. I mean, well, one thing I would say is, you know, I briefly touched on this earlier, is that it's worth considering that there's still this TikTok deal that's in the ether as well.
Right.
You know, this, you know, it's banned and they have to find a buyer for it. One of the prospective buyers for TikTok, a deal that would have to be approved not just by the Chinese government, but also by our government, by Trump's administration, is one of the potential buyers that's floating out there is Larry Ellison. You know, so it's worth considering not just where we are, but where we're going. And, you know, because that this is an era, obviously, of increasing media consolidation, and that is a type and a part of media consolidation, especially in a landscape where so much of it has gotten online. The other thing to consider here, and you know, is that, well, Oracle itself has lots of properties, but you know, they also have their data centers and software and storage. If you're Larry Ellison, for example, I believe I saw some reporting about the prospect of moving all of Paramount systems for their media over to Oracle, which would be a great boon for that company in terms of a big deal. I mean, I understand the synergies there, but there's a lot of interest. And I think that the overall part of this, and this is the piece to consider, and you sort of framed this well in the discussion, is that there is, and I think John Stewart touched on this, there's a couple things that I think about here. One is, you can't, these are Trump allies, or at least they're not hostile to Trump. And they had to jump through the ringer. I mean, David Ellison had to do a whole performative dance repeatedly where, you know, they not only made the decision, and I think this is the part that got, I think this is the one piece of this story that has gotten lost a lot in the public conversation, is that the same week where they announced the deal, that the settlement for CBS, they had also made the decision to cancel Colbert's show and informed Colbert's team. They just hadn't announced it publicly, but that decision was made and internally announced. They announced it publicly. It became public the same week that David Ellison went to the FCC right before final approval and promised them that the new Skydance, the new merged company, would have a diversity of voices, a diversity of content, which is sort of code word for they're gonna water down the types of things that the administration doesn't like. And I think that performance is key here, because that's, again, at least not a hostile entity, let alone the Murdoch stuff. That's one thing that I just can't help escape but recognizing. And the other part that I think is a tie in there, and John Stewart was sort of getting here, is that there's a lot of calculation being made here, because the content will get worse over time. And, you know, they're making an assumption that they're not going to be the only ones that dilute their content. Part of this, you know, if you make less interesting things over time, in theory, you lose your competitive advantage, right? But I think they are making the same calculus from a business perspective that everyone else, every one of their competitors, is going to do the same thing when confronted with that question. And that's the other part that scares me, is that they've already internalized the idea that the marketplace is going to adjust accordingly. And that gets back to the first point that you asked, is that these are not nameless, faceless individuals, you know, abstract entities, they're people. That there are individual people here with a lot of power and influence that have amassed even more of it now as we move in this land, this terrain, that are going along to get along, and worse, have made a calculus that their peers are going to act the same way when confronted with the decision. And I think that paints a pretty bleak picture of the trajectory that we're going in, unless it's abated in some meaningful way.
And they have a lot of money. I want to mention that I got this information about Larry Ellison and AI from the New York Times. They report that in January, Larry Ellison was prominently featured at the White House for an announcement of a project called Stargate, which will build data centers for artificial intelligence. Larry Ellison supports a surveillance society. Mm-hmm. And a federal court in California in November gave final approval to a settlement over a class action suit accusing Oracle of improperly capturing and selling individuals' online and offline data without their permission. Oracle agreed to pay $115 million without admitting wrongdoing. So there's some more information about Larry Ellison, and then he's putting up most of the $8 billion by his son David to buy Paramount. We've got a couple of questions from listeners who say, can someone please explain how the money from Paramount and Disney is going to Trump's library? How is this even legal? Any idea, Jeff?
Yeah, it makes me laugh because no one knows. You know, they've offered to these bribes, thinly disguised bribes, in the guise of being settlements of lawsuits. But there's no one to receive the money, and there may never be a presidential library. We don't know that. So, it's a great question. It's very murky. I like the original question about who owns. Mm-hmm. I mean, Larry Ellison is, now that Musk and Trump are in a conflict, Larry Ellison is the billionaire who's closest to Trump. He's been a big donor to Republicans year after year after year. And he's very, very close with Donald Trump. And now, in a sense, he and his son are the bosses of 60 Minutes. It's not a pretty picture.
Mm. Well, and then a few other things that we have not touched on, and there's just so much going on. So I just want to remind people, in case you forgot about this or never even read about it. In February, the New York Times reported that the Trump administration notified four major news organizations that they would have to give up their dedicated office space at the Pentagon to make way for other outlets, including the far-right sites Breitbart and One America. So in a memo, the New York Times, NBC, NPR, and Politico had to vacate their office space by February 14th. And so One America was swapped for NBC. Breitbart would be the radio outlet instead of NPR. So that's really important. And I mean, these things would make news any other time, but because there's so much going on, it's almost like a blip. I also think it's really interesting that, and I forgot about this, that the AP, they're still not allowed in the Oval Office or to cover any presidential events, Angelo, because they refuse to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. I mean, this started in February, and they're still banned from the Oval Office.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and it's, you know, the incredible thing about all that is to show how petty the administration is, that no slight is too significant. The AP's editorial guidelines simply said that they had to use both names when it's in dispute that way. And I mean, it wasn't even that they were being so blatantly oppositional. That would be fine too. They just had an editorial policy that said when it's up for debate, you have to use both. They were using both. But it wasn't good enough because they need total capitulation and compliance. And I think the part that's startling is that felt like such a significant thing at the time, and yet it has faded, and it has become normalized and acceptable to some degree, or rather more frequent. And you know, they just did that to a degree to Murdoch-aligned papers. They didn't let the Wall Street Journal on the plane to travel with Trump to Scotland, and they made it very clear that it was for that, sort of the tit for tat. And that is the environment we live in, that they're not only adding in these sort of, you know, aligned, sycophantic outlets, essentially propaganda outlets, that are not really doing journalism. They're doing amplification and propaganda, but they're also penalizing, you know, actual journalists. And that in turn, again, slowly closes off the information that gets available. I mean, them not letting these out papers in certain spaces is not the biggest thing in terms of these news outlets' ability to generate news, but they're significant demonstrations of power and retaliation. And when you start to add them up, you slowly suffocate, not just through those performative acts, but through the very legal and lawfare actions that we've been talking about today that make it a lot harder for good information to get into the bottom of the food chain, which, you know, it's not just that they're slowly choking off that good information, they're then pumping it with all kinds of poison, bad information. And that is how you transform a society into something that was a liberal democracy to more of sort of an authoritarian environment.
And we haven't even had time to talk about all of the columnists that have left the Washington Post after Jeff Bezos instructed the paper's opinion operation to, quote, narrow its purview, according to the New York Times. So many people have left the Post. Jeff, what are your final thoughts about just the free flow of information? I mean, we need it more than ever right now, given there are so many lies being peddled on a regular basis.
Yeah, my advice to your listeners is turn off corporate news and keep searching and relying on independent outlets, nonprofit outlets, and support those outlets with your funds and spread the word about those outlets. They don't have big marketing and advertising budgets. When you talk about the flow of information, I watch the nightly news shows, the nightly broadcasts on NBC, CBS, and ABC. And then I watch the comedians, especially Colbert and The Daily Show, owned by Paramount, and then Jimmy Kimmel, owned by Disney, and then Seth Meyers, the Comcast conglomerate on NBC. I learn more from a 10-minute monologue from these comedians than I do from watching weeks of the nightly news shows. So it doesn't surprise me that this war on journalism that they've been waging at the Trump administration since day one has now become a war on comedians. And I've never forgotten, you know, Trump's always suing or threatening to sue. One of my favorites is when he threatened to sue The Onion, the satire newspaper. But, he's thin-skinned, and these comedians, because it's comedy, because it's entertainment, because it's not news, they can often be blunter, they can be more in-depth, they can have longer sound bites from Trump showing his idiocy and his falsehoods. They do a better job of it than television mainstream news does. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we are right now, and we will continue to follow this. Thank you both so much for your work, and thank you for joining us. Jeff Cohen is a longtime media critic who founded Fair back in 1986. He worked on The Donahue Show, senior producer on MSNBC, until it was canceled 3 weeks before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Angelo Carasone is chair and president of Media Matters. They analyze and correct conservative misinformation in the media. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.